ridiculous debate between Mitt Romney and Obama on coal, where Mitt Romney said, "You're fighting a war on coal, and I'm going to stop that." And what did Obama say? Did he say, "Well, coal's, you know, we can't afford to burn all this coal. It's destroying the planet. It's the fuel of the past." No, he said, "What are you saying? I'm not a friend of coal. I'm a real friend of coal. We're mining more coal now than we did when I started office." He defended coal. This is the debate you get when you have a Republican. Nobody is talking about all the voters here who really want to see the planet burn down. So they call this triangulation. And the difference when the Democrats and Republicans are arguing and insulting each other, we got to point out to people that they're really arguing over who's going to be able to control this right-wing political system. And what happens every year is that the Republicans will move a little more to the right and the Democrats will go right with them. They'll still be arguing with each other, but they move the entire debate in our political system over to the right. So that's why we need third parties. When you put a Green Party here who's back in this part of the spectrum, suddenly all these voters are in danger of going green, and the Democrats have to go back and move a little more to the left to really show something. So in Europe, this happens all the time. You have a more left party and a more right party, and those two parties kind of steer where the big establishment parties go. When the left starts gaining ground, this whole spectrum shifts a little bit more to the left. We don't have that in America because we've got two parties have seized our system. Next slide.
Just a question. Triangulation because of those two triangles?
No, it's not a really good phrase, but what it means is you look at where your opponent is and you get over close to them, but just a little bit more toward the center than your opponent. They call that triangulation.
Okay.
And I realize it's not a very good term probably, but you'll see that term used. Yeah. So the other thing, that sort of a fallacy that's put into the accusation often is this: it's all about winning, isn't it? Like, isn't the reason we have elections is just to decide who wins? So Alicia Witt did this, you know, "Oh, you only have 3 or 4%, so what's your role? You don't really expect you're going to win." And they use that to try to just discount giving any media coverage or anything to the people who don't appear to be in a position to win. But there's a lot of things that go on. And let's see if I have this slide. I can't remember because I checked this slide.
Yeah, I don't.
No, okay. So let me just say, yeah, I'll go back to that. So there are a lot of things that happen in an election other than who wins. Third parties historically have actually shifted the whole national debate, even when they didn't win, by introducing ideas, reforms, showing that voters support something. So voting is people's free speech. By having a third party there, they often say something. They say something important that's important to the nation. There are also other reasons that we run, simply to ballot access, federal matching funds, other important things that third parties do other than just money. So we need to push back a little bit whenever we hear somebody in the news sort of says, "It's all about these two front runners. Isn't that the only thing the voters need to just get focused on them," right? No, that's a terrible system when you only have two people who are, and in fact, if one of the front runners gets a little bit ahead, so it looks like the other one doesn't have a chance to win, they won't toss out the coverage of that second establishment party, I guarantee you. Okay, next.
Talking about a Green New Deal if it wasn't for the Green Party?
That's right. The Green New Deal, universal health care, all these were ideas introduced by Jill Stein in 2016 race. And now at least some of the Democratic candidates, not the one that's in the lead, but some of the more progressive districts are talking about all these things that wouldn't be talked. You can go back in history, you know, things like just labor unions and Social Security and all of those were put on the table.
That's
by
right.
Third parties running political races and scaring the establishment enough that they made a concession. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we covered most of these. The two-party system, think one of the later slides will cover this, but it really is something we should be opposing. But anytime somebody says there are just two parties, we can say that's the problem. That's the problem we have. We have two parties. They both represent Wall Street. There's no voice in the race that represents the people. Okay, go to the next one. And okay, this is just the point we were making before. Jill called for cancellation of student debt and tuition-free higher education.
Thank you.
And what do we see? And the Democrats poo-pooed that idea. Oh, no, that would be too expensive. That's not feasible. That's not practical. You're so impractical. And this year, what do we see? All the liberal block of Democratic Party candidates are now talking about this. And I give credit to Bernie Sanders, too, for pushing them into this. But certainly Jill was a factor. Green New Deal, universal single payer, legalization of marijuana. Mm-hmm. Oh, that crazy green, you know, with this crazy, crazy far out idea of legalizing marijuana. That's why we don't want to cover her. Well, all the Democratic candidates now are supporting legalization of marijuana. 4 years later, Jill Stein isn't so crazy anymore. And people don't usually know about this. She called for a negotiation with North Korea. She said North and South Korea can actually negotiate this crisis down. We don't have to go over there and unleash a nuclear war with them in order to solve it. You know, that the leader he talks crazy, but you know, the South Koreans say they can negotiate with him, and we should be encouraging them to do so. And the Democrats all said, oh, that's crazy. He's a madman. You know, we have to get the Sixth Fleet to go sailing over here and fight him. You know, Jill was right. Mm-hmm. And remember, the Democratic Party is a protector of Wall Street privilege all the way. They can't be allowed to be the only voice to question the Republicans. Okay, next slide. Thank you.
So yeah, this is where I think I'd be coming in.
Okay, so I'm going to let Justin talk a little bit more about the spoiler issue as it applies to particular races.
And I wanted to start off, and first of all, thank you, John, for letting me add to this conversation here. I do a lot of online commenting on people, challenging people about the spoiler effect, splitting the vote, a two-party system, and I use a lot of air quotes when I say all of those things. So I want to talk a little bit about the two-party system, because a lot of times when I'm getting into these conversations, they're like, well, it's only a two-party system. You know, and that's just the fact.
Yeah.
Our system is a two-party system. Well, so we have a plurality system, right? That's first past the post voting system. And Duverger's law it's more a theory, but that's related to plurality voting, that, you know, that only leads to a two-party system. You have a winner and you have a loser. And you can, you know, otherwise, you know, those other parties are just gonna split the vote, spoil it, whatever. But there's other countries out there with plurality voting, such as United Kingdom, India, Australia, Canada. All those have more than two-party representation. So when they tell you that it's a two-party system, tell them it's just the same as the voting system over in the United Kingdom. And they got more than two parties there, right? They got the Labour Party.
Mm-hmm.
Don't buy it. So what's the difference here? You know, we got money in politics. There's Citizens United. We got corporately owned ruling parties that don't let us into the debates. They own the debates. They own the media. So challenge them on that. Don't, you know, don't allow them to just say it's a two-party system. And Republicrats don't always win. We got Angus King, who was first elected governor in Maine as an independent, and America's favorite senator, Bernie Sanders, was an independent. He's running with the Democrats now, but you know, he won elections as an independent. And there have been others. We had this gentleman in Maine I'm going to talk about a little bit, Elliot Cutler. He didn't quite win back in 2010. And the reason why I want to cover this is because this kind of ties into why we actually fought for ranked choice voting in Maine. So the candidates, Paula Page, everybody remembers Paula Page because he actually won. And we hated him. He was our Trump in Maine. Libby Mitchell, who was that? Well, that was the Democrat. They never remembered Libby Mitchell. They remember the next guy, Elliot Cutler, who was the independent in the race. We also had, you see, three other, a couple other independents, and we had a bunch of others. So the results there you see, 37.6% went to LePage, 35.9% went to Elliot Cutler, this independent. Libby Mitchell, only 18% of the vote. Sean Moody, 5%. Others, you know, 1.8. So a couple things I'd like to say here. First of all, before going into the election, how could somebody said, well, we really don't want LePage, you know? Well, you know, okay, well, we got to go with the Democrat. Well, the Democrat vastly underperforms in this race. But how would you have known that before the election? There's no way you could have known. And ultimately, you know, I have here on the bottom, who gave us Paul LePage? Well, it was Elliot Cutler, but not because he spoiled the election, because he split the vote, because clearly he didn't split the vote. It's because his campaign failed to win over enough of the uncommitted voters. If he won over those the 1.8% there, 10,396 votes, it would have put him ahead of LePage. So this is one of the things I want to say is that the spoiler, the one that did not win, it's all on them. And I'll kind of cover that in a couple more slides here.
I would say Mr. Mitchell was the spoiler.
Or Ms. Mitchell.
Whatever.
Exactly.
Also point out again here, so you probably already saw this there, the most successful third party in American history, right? We could talk, there's some other, you know, very successful third parties, right? The Bulmers Party. But the Republican Party won it with Abraham Lincoln in 1860. It led to the Civil War, the assassination of Lincoln. It led to a revolution, it's actually a revolution to abolish slavery. So some big things can happen in these realignment elections. So they can happen, there's a precedent for it. And we should say, we should run in the, you know, these elections. So who's really to blame? We talked about Gore earlier, and this slide here is great, right? Where, you know, it has those undervotes, the people that left the blank, I'll talk a little bit more about that. And just point out here that the Democrats who vote Republican, 378,000 votes, that counts doubly.
Right.
It's more, doubly more damaging to Democrats than those Greens that, or the Dems that voted Green. Because that's taking a vote away from Gore and giving it to Trump. Whereas this would just take it away from Gore. Or it's not Bush. Get on my president's street. So it would be taking a vote away from Bush and, or sorry, Gore, and not giving it to Bush. Okay, so you guys know what I mean. I think I was mentioning my president's there. Okay, so what about Clinton? Who's to blame there? Well, I'm going to say she was a lousy candidate and she had a lousy campaign team.
Yep.
And there's, that's good. That's good. So the gap between Clinton and Trump, there was 10,000 votes there. I'd like to point out this race in Michigan for some reason. 10,000 votes. Jill Stein got 50,000 votes. Whoa, she could have, you know, given those votes to Clinton and called it a day. But then Garrett Johnson, again, you know, if you do that whole transfer of Libertarians to Republicans, you know, 150,000 votes, okay? But then you had 90,000 votes that were undervotes, far more than Jill Stein. So they didn't vote for anybody on the ballot, right? They went out and voted for everybody else on the race. But so all Clinton had to do was win 11% of those undervotes, and she would have won that. So again, I put the onus on the campaign. And you got a question here?
Yes. Why have blame at all?
Well, that's a really good point. And I think, maybe we can talk about that a little bit more at the end. Let's save that. So one thing I want to point out with these undervotes, by the way, is besides people that just don't bother to fill in anybody for president, that might have been, and I think this is around the country, you should try to look at this, how many people actually wrote in Bernie Sanders where he was not an eligible candidate or voting candidate in that state? Mm-hmm. I think they tossed those votes out and it appears as undervotes.
Mm-hmm. Well, do they appear as undervotes?
I think in
the
some
states. The write-ins are undervotes?
Well, write-ins where they're not registered to be a write-in candidate. So in Michigan, Bernie Sanders like, if he didn't register to be a write-in candidate, and somebody wrote in Bernie Sanders, it counts for nothing.
Yep. That's true in a lot of states.
So I think that's an interesting thing with those undervotes. You know, you see those undervotes. Are those people that wrote in Bernie Sanders and just didn't count for crap?
Does that disqualify their entire ballot with the local elections?
No, it does not.
Okay.
So going on, Democratic campaign team believe that their own phony polling, so they vested emails, WikiLeaks, right? They talked about the polling that they were rigging for, you know, to make them look good. And they believed their polls about Michigan saying that Clinton was ahead by like, you know, 4 or 5%. The campaign dismissed the Dems that warned that they were falling behind in Michigan. In the last couple weeks, Clinton spent $2 million in states like Arizona and Texas that they were never gonna win the Electoral College votes from. So that's a bad campaign strategy. So again, I would, rather than blame, I would recommend that the Democrats look in a mirror before they blame the Greens or anybody else. Because people do have a right to vote as they see fit. Okay, so, and then Biden, who knows? But I just want to point out here, you know, they've been having a significant amount of losses here over the last few years, since 2009 to 2017. 63 U.S. rep seats, 11 U.S. Senate seats, 14 governor seats, and about 1,000 state legislative seats. And there wasn't a Green running in every single one of those races.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's a track record. That's a trend. See ya. Okay. Okay, so with some additional takeaways, again, actual voting data. Ask them, you know, if somebody's saying, oh, I heard about, you know, they spoiled the election or they split the vote, ask them to give you an example. Take a look at the data with them, and the data doesn't back it up. Always go to the data. Use examples. The spoiler is not always a third party or an independent candidate. Sometimes it's a Democrat. Again, you know, we look at that case there with, 2010 gubernatorial election in Maine. Democratic Party often nominates inferior candidates and runs lousy campaigns. 2020, we're looking at a repeat of 2016, where they're gonna give us Biden, lousy campaign. Right now they're touting Biden as the more electable candidate too, but they did the same thing for Clinton.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how well did that work? Third party independent candidates can and do win elections, right? And sometimes in a big way. Granted, it was the Civil War, it was, 1860s, Abraham Lincoln, and you see what kind of change that made. We do need ranked choice voting and electoral reforms to make election results more democratic. So talk a little bit about, there's no such thing as a spoiler. The candidate campaign that loses the election only has itself to blame, and maybe I should take out that word blame. I like that. Okay, so Democratic choose ranked choice voting. Winners elected by majority by plurality, okay? In Maine, we've been fighting for ranked choice voting, and we have it for federal races, and we have it for party primaries, but it doesn't count. We have it in some cities for like a mayoral race, but it doesn't count for state rep, state legislator, governor races, state races, essentially. So we have more work to do there. It reflects more genuine voter sentiment. We're familiar with ranked choice voting. We use it here in our internal processes. No matter how many candidates are on the ballot, no one has to be forced off the ballot to avoid vote splitting. And it allows for more parties without fear voting, so voting out of fear. And in fact, that's one thing I'm always telling people I talk to in political conversations. We gotta stop voting out of fear. It's time to be brave with the ballot box. And it increases voter turnout, which helps those down ticket races. So there's actually a huge advantage. In 2020, we're planning to run a US Senate race in Maine with ranked choice voting. And because of that, we're gonna, we're facing off against Susan Collins and a Democrat. And there's a couple out there that are interested in running for the Democrats as well. And so Susan Collins is gonna be tough to beat, but with a Green in the race and a Democrat, the voters on the left are gonna come out and more independents are gonna come out. to vote for one of those two, and chances are the votes are going to transfer between those two, that's going to make it more likely to be Susan Collins in the end.
Right.
And it's going to help out all those down-ticket races, too. I have here electoral college reform. And change it from a winner-take-all system, you know, we could have debates on should we abolish the electoral college. You know, that's maybe an interesting conversation to have. But if we had just taken, I'd like to go back to the slide kind of, but, you know, basically in Florida in 2000, if we split up the electoral college votes like we do in Maine, where we give one per congressional district, and then the overall winner of the state gets two for this, basically their senators. The results of that race, it would have been a Bush won 15 congressional seats, and there's 23 congressional seats in Florida. And then you add the two for, so basically, the electoral college results would have been 263 for Bush, 274 for Gore. Gore would have won the election if they split the electoral college vote like they do in Maine.
Wow.
In Nebraska. So, and then get money out of politics. You know, overturn Citizens United, publicly fund elections, and boycott Democrats and Republicans. You know, I have to tell people, if you lean to the right, go ahead and go Libertarian. If you're with us on the left, come Green. Boycott those, you know, corporate parties, and we'll be a lot better off. Get money out of politics by boycotting those. And I think that kind of gets us back to your last slide here, your conclusion.
Just looking back. Yeah, thank you, Justin. That was very, very nice. And so what are we saying in the end? In the end, we have to step up as Greens and just point out that anyone who's trying to push the spoiler argument is actually attacking the voters. They're attacking the rights of voters to have their vote mean something. Let's see. Okay, I think I had another conclusion slide. I changed this, but Jackie.
I just wanted to add to what Justin said that something that's really important for everybody to understand, and I've been telling Democrats this for a really long while, the Democratic Party in the presidential elections and also in the gubernatorial elections, because they want to own all the states, they will put their money and effort into the most conservative candidate. And so in most states for governor, the progressive Dems are the ones pushing the vote, and they will work for the progressive candidate. But it's the non-progressive that wins. Ergo, third parties have a really good chance to get in on states because the Democrats are stupid enough to keep putting in the conservatives that the majority of progressive Dems don't want. So that is an important factor for us to also understand.
Yeah. That's how Mitt Romney won in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really important because that's what they do. They've never put a progressive in for a presidential candidate, and they don't.
Yeah.
It's really important.
So anyway, the spoiler tactic is really just, it's just a tactic. It's based upon fallacies. It's used to eliminate competition and to bully voters into surrendering their free speech. So our message to voters is, don't surrender your free speech. If someone starts giving you the spoiler thing, you should be incensed. They're trying to take away your freedom to vote for what you really want and convince you to vote against yourself. And that you should view that as an insult as soon as you hear the spoiler argument trying to push upon you. And if you don't vote for what you want, when will you ever get what you want? Who's ever going to defend you? Once you become a reliable spoiler voter who always votes the lesser of two evils, they can carry this system all the way over to the right. And before long, you'll be told that, you know, the Republicans want to have all the workers be beat with 8-foot bullwhips when they go to work to get more out of them. And the Democrats they're all opposed to that. They only want 5-foot bullwhips at the maximum. And so Jill Stein says it very well. She says, when you vote out of fear, it gives you everything you fear. Everything you fear comes out. It's an attack on our constitutional rights to run for office. You know, you hear Democrats sometimes talk about, oh, we want everybody to have a, we want voter turnout, we want everybody to have a right to vote, which is not really true, but that's their rhetoric. But what about the right to run for office? I mean, isn't that also guaranteed by our Constitution? Mm-hmm. There's nothing in the Constitution that says only two parties shall have the right to appear on the ballot. I mean, you know, we're talking about very, you know, and the example I give is in Saddam Hussein's Iraq. They expected everybody to vote. They got 92%, 95% turnout. If you didn't vote, they looked upon you suspiciously. But when you got in the voting booth and you took your ballot and were ready to cast your vote, there was only one name on the ballot for you to vote for, mm-hmm. Saddam Hussein. Okay. And so if they can control who gets to run, they've effectively taken away the value of the vote and taken away our democracy. So we've got to really insist that we have a right to run, to be on the ballot, to be in the debates. And it's the two-party system that's really undermining America's democracy. That's why we're marching to the right. That's why people are apathetic and don't even bother to come to vote. We've really got to replace it with a healthy multi-party system. And we shouldn't let the big parties, the supporters of establishment journalism and the establishment corporate press is working hand in glove with them to try to drive our system into a two-party system that moves to the right. But we've got to fight this. So to defend our political rights, reject the spoiler tactic, vote your conscience, it's your free speech, and, well, I demand electoral reform. It's the main one being ranked choice voting, which solves the spoiler problem. So that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're just going to open it up for discussion. If people have something they want to add, I'm sure they do. And we've got about 15 minutes. And again, I don't know where the notebook's over here. So if you sign that, you'll get the copy. So I'm just going to start. A few more people are over here and raising their hands. Let me start with the lady who was first back there, and then I'll come up for this.
Okay. I also think this whole thing is there to split progressives, because I don't know about other people, but I have a lot of friends who are progressive Democrats, and I get this from them. So it's really also used to put something in between just ordinary people who have the same ideas.
Yeah. Right, it's like single payer health care. Oh, that's a crazy idea, you know. Only the Greens are advocating that, you know. And so, yeah, you take progressives and prevent them from coalescing.
Yeah,
okay. So,
I think proportional voting is even more important than ranked choice voting, because you could take what is in effect now, a presidential race that's limited to 10 or 11 or 12 swing states, and actually make it a national election, which we've never ever had in this country.
Yeah.
And you don't have to deal with that problem of the small states wanting to hold on to their extraordinary extra representation they get through the Electoral College. Let them keep that, but spread the vote between multiple candidates, and we have an opening we can walk through.
That requires a little more discussion. We ought to have a workshop on that.
Okay.
Who else? I was going right to left here. Just I think I can get through everybody.
Right to left.
So I've been studying media for a while, and I was curious myself about the horse race and everything else. I looked into some of my university's best news databases, and I found nothing except for about car spoilers. I had to delete that. car spoilers. Before 1999, there was nothing about a spoiler effect anywhere before 1999 in the news. The first article I found was speculation that Ross Perot had cost the Republicans their election, and would Nader do the same? And that was speculating for the 2000 election. And then I looked at their chart of how many articles contain the spoiler effect between 1999 and now, and like it was steadily raising, and it fell a little while during the Obama years, And all of a sudden, this huge spike in 2016.
We should have a graph on that. I'll bet it's something.
Yeah, that would be good.
So it's really interesting that even though there's only been about 8 elections that didn't have third-party candidates in presidential races, we all of a sudden have thought that maybe the third parties have been spoiling everybody this whole time. And how odd that seems. So that's very interesting to me. But whenever I talk to people, I try and keep it a moral issue that this is supposed to be a democracy. Do we actually care about that everybody being allowed to vote for who they want to and being allowed to run in the elections like we were guaranteed by the Constitution? Or do we want to have this horse race politics where you have to have $1 million to run for the governor's office, because that's the average cost of a governor's race? So are we buying the governor's office, or are we running for governor?
That's a good point. And the media, watching the
pretty
media
much
is
all
important,
of it now.
So I'm glad you brought that up. And
yeah.
The other thing is that when they analyzed the media coverage in 2016, 50% of every article the media wrote was about the horse race. It was about, oh, Clinton seems to have gained 2% points, and the thing that does, that's really degenerate journalism, because it focuses the attention on these fluctuating poll numbers that don't really mean too much. And it also focuses attention on the Democrat and the Republican, because if you're just covering who's edging ahead among the front runners, you certainly don't. What's the point in interviewing somebody who's a third party? I mean, even though they may have better ideas.
And you mentioned the key word, too, propaganda. It's propaganda. Mm-hmm. It's not news. It's not media.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not really informing the public. It's propaganda. Yeah.
There are some hosts, especially on the internet, talk shows, who are very good about interviewing third parties, and it's the most informative coverage of the issues you'll get. When they talk to Clinton or Trump, it's just ridiculous kinds of irrelevant discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go here.
So we were talking about electoral reform. Obviously, needs to happen. I'm going to piggyback off what you said on the more electoral systems. Now, how does RCV, in your opinion, meet up with AV?
Approval voting. Definitely something that is talked about. As you know, we've actually talked about it in our own internal elections a little bit. It seems like a great voting system, we should, we clearly have a system that does not work. We should be looking at other countries, other models of voting systems that do work better for more democratic representation, more parties, and more voices. We bill ourselves as a democracy, right? we love democracy here.
Very
don't really practice that. And I think, we look to other countries, we should be looking to other countries for single payer health care and other solutions like this, and also for electoral reforms, I think.
So. I've done some interesting studies of approval vote, all the different ways of voting by taking the same elections and then running it to see who would win under all these different systems. It's kind of interesting to see. I mean, sometimes it doesn't make much difference, in who wins. I mean, I personally would have a hard time with the voting system, approval voting, that had me say Hillary Clinton and Jill Stein are equal. I really want to say no. Jill Stein is my number one. Now, after I vote for Jill Stein number one, you could make the argument to me that I should put in number two for Hillary because she's better than Trump. Okay. But I sort of think we can talk about
it. Okay,
go next.
And I would say, when it comes to media coverage, it's not fair. It goes to people who get the most money, and people on the left and the right both distrust polls, but then they want to say they should use the polls to decide who gets into the debate. And it's just totally illogical.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Jill said that the debate should drive the polls, not the other way around. Let the voters hear the candidates, and then that should determine how the polls come out. And we're doing it the other way around. Candidate has the least name recognition, never gets to be seen.
The least money.
Yeah, I mentioned the Electoral College. It's interesting that since Florida, the Democrats have never raised that as any kind of a serious issue, and I think we ought to be pointing that out. It's working perfectly the way it was set up by the founding white male patriarchy.
Oh, yeah, that way.
So is the Senate. And we don't talk about this. There should not be a Senate.
True.
Senate is the House of Lords.
Yes.
And it's functioning perfectly.
For that.
So I think I'm so glad you did this, John. And we need a whole campaign on Democratic elections. And we have to confront the Bernies and the Ocasio-Cortez and all these people about our rights and Democratic elections. And John coined a terrific phrase. He said, instead of voter suppression, we have to talk about party suppression. And that nails it. It really nails it. The last thing I want to say and suggest, I'm on the Outreach Committee, the National Outreach Committee. This is so important that I think we ought to think not only of material that we can get out everywhere, taking the main points of what the work you've done, we need a brochure on the whole topic.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been working on something which I didn't quite get ready in time for this, but I call the Spoiler Resource Book. It's sort of like, it has all the references, it has all the arguments, and it's not intended to be like you give this to voters to read, but it's for like candidates to read, and then they pick out the facts, and then they put it into the brochures and
We need to put it out.
And then we can add that graph. Yeah, I know. how they created this.
And those products have to be tailored and right. And some things are, some things are difficult to explain to people, so they don't like in the middle of a campaign, you can't stop and like going to extremely complicated subjects sometimes. So you got to figure out, what can you get across quickly? But we do need that material that we can use, and every candidate should use it. All of our candidates will say something to reject the spoiler, but they don't always have all the arguments sort of lined up neatly. And that's one reason we're doing this workshop, and probably these slides we will improve on. So I'm going to go this way. And then
I was just going to say, too, there's something there. Go ahead.
My philosophy in some ways says that it's basically our country's problems, all our country's problems go down to the money politics, which is the corporate sponsored government we have. So when I go to vote, why would I be supporting our problems and vote for a corporate sponsored candidate? I'm going to vote for anybody who's not taking money. That's my philosophy. Yeah. And then the other part is basically, the people that don't vote, which I think is about 40% of people don't vote candidates, and if you ask them why, it's because they'll tell you, what for? You know, we get the same no matter who we vote for. Yeah. We'll get corporate sponsor candidates.
Right.
Why should we vote for a problem? Why don't we fight against it?
Good point.
I remember when I was a kid, like seventh grade, and you learned about the evil Soviet Union. Now they have elections with only one candidate. I raised my hand and said, but we only have two candidates. But there are people in this country that believe that the two-party system is in the Constitution.
Yep. Wow. They think it's...
Reeves, you're not allowed to run as we live in a two-party system.
Right.
Yeah.
And I hate to tell you, but the first time I ran for office, which was 40 years ago, for my borough council, and other people come up, Mark, you're a smart kid, you got a lot of good ideas, but I don't want the Republicans to win. Or, Mark, you're a smart kid, you got some great ideas, but I don't want the Democrats to win, so I got to vote for the Republicans. So that the spoiler thing was even there in a tiny little town with, 800 voters.
Wow.
Okay, background, man.
I think people raised some really good ideas. I think that glad that somebody mentioned proportional representation. I think maybe that would be one way to radically reform the Senate. I'm a little nervous about saying that the candidate needs a majority to win but in legislative races, because you know, I think we can see that the Greens, as Greens were like a mass movement really, but we may not have 50% in any one particular district. I don't think that our politics necessarily are defined by where we happen to live. You know, Massachusetts, we have Green voters in